Cliff, thank you for that introduction, and we will delve into those topics. I'm going to take this opportunity as kind of to set the table for the course of the discussion today. So I may touch a little bit on how we got here, where things are right now, and where things are going in the future. So bear with me. I'll also be joining Viva's panel, and we'll be able to take questions that you may have regarding the role of ISDA, credit default swaps generally, and the various things going on in the market. I did put together a few slides. We have not had a chance to copy them for you. We can certainly get them around for you. But these are a few basic principles that I'd like to cover over the course of my 10 minutes or so here. And to emphasize some very important things about credit default swaps, so we all have this understanding from our perspective. CDS have added incredible value in many different ways to the financial marketplace, and we'll talk about how some of that applies. CDS have worked extremely well. If we look at some of the events over the past few months and our experience in how the document itself, how the process of settling these trades has gone, I think we can say that it has worked actually extremely well, and I appreciate your reference, Cliff, to the fact that if there is order in this market, it's due to some of the efforts that we, together with our members and likely many of you, have committed your time and resources to. CDS are not the cause of the financial crisis. The roots of the financial crisis are in poor lending decisions, primarily here in the United States, affecting subprime, Alt-A, and some other areas. We can talk about how that has flowed through the system and how credit default swaps may be a feature of some of the instruments that are involved in that, but fundamentally, the root of the problem is the housing finance issues. CDS are different from other products. We've got some actual basic confusion over CDS, CDO, derivatives versus a broader concept of derivatives. We as ISDA focus on the so-called bilateral, privately negotiated, custom-tailored part of the business, not the derivative securities like CDOs or, if you will, ABS, if you view those as derivatives. We talk about CDS exposure and the fact that it's not all that well understood. The numbers we cite and the numbers that Cliff cited is what we call the notional amount, which is more a measure of activity and not necessarily of exposure. So it's not a measurement of value at risk in the system, and we'll talk a little bit about that. The CDS infrastructure is quite strong. Again, as Cliff pointed out, a lot of effort's been put into that through ISDA, through our members, and there are more developments on the way, and we'll talk about some of those very briefly. And then we think that as we move into this regulatory debate in terms of reform of the system, that CDS undoubtedly, and derivatives more generally, will be considered as part of that process, but we should be looking at a comprehensive, holistic set of regulatory reforms. We should work very hard to identify root causes and develop solutions that are focused on those root causes and avoid a piecemeal approach that may occur as people focus on specific issues. So CDS add value in a number of different ways. They're an essential risk management tool that frankly didn't exist at the time of previous banking crises, which may explain for one reason why there's a bit of focus on them. They didn't exist really before. Even at the time of LTCM, they were really in their infancy in terms of a tool used in the marketplace. The means of hedging credit risk exists in many ways. You've got loans, bonds, those types of credit exposures. You may have business relationships, trading relationships, supply relationships, where if you're concerned about the creditworthiness of your customer, your counterparty, your borrower, you may wish to use these tools to manage some of that risk. It's a tool that allows investors to express a view on the cost of credit, and this is where that term speculator comes up, where you may have heard people refer to naked positions or short selling of credit default swaps. And as with any market, as with any product, the role of speculators is a very important one to provide liquidity to the marketplace. If you could only access this market at the time you actually had a credit exposure that you were looking to hedge, you would find yourself very constrained in terms of the options available to you. Speculators provide that liquidity. And this notion of shorting, again, we go back to the bilateral concept of this contract. It is a two-party contract. If somebody's shorting a credit, somebody else is going long that credit. That's just fundamental to the nature of the product. And we talk a lot about transparency, and there are some movements to provide greater transparency in terms of positions that we'll talk about shortly. But in fact, CDS have provided transparency to the pricing of credit and to the valuation of credit that did not exist before. Bonds were traded in a different way. Loans were priced in a certain way. CDS provide additional levels of transparency to that credit relationship. CDS work. They've worked actually pretty well. Let's look at the perspective. A lot of focus is on the perspective of the seller. We'll talk about that second. But let's first talk about from the perspective of the buyer. I've bought protection. At a time of distress like we've seen over the last few months, that's exactly when I want my protection to be effective and to be smooth and settled very quickly. And that's, in fact, exactly what we've seen. Buyers have gotten what they paid for. Just think about what the implications would be for the financial markets generally if we had Lehman Brothers defaults, Fannie Freddie credit events, all the other credit events we've seen and that we continue to see, and there wasn't the certainty that you could settle and get the value of that contract. We would have far more serious problems than we've seen so far. From the seller perspective, yes, it's been a bit of a perfect storm here, but the fact of the matter is they chose to take on credit risk in various ways, whether that's to underlying single names through the index market or through writing protection on underlying super senior tranches of CDOs, for instance. I think we will focus and should focus on the role of risk management and internal processes and policies at different firms. And just take AIG as an example. I mean, that's clearly, from the credit default swap perspective, the most challenging situation to talk about, because they were large writers of protection of credit default swaps. But they chose through that process to take on that exposure to subprime through the CDOs. They traded on their AAA. They typically refused to provide collateral except in the one instance where they were downgraded, and they effectively fell off a cliff when that happened because they all of a sudden had calls for collateral that created significant liquidity problems. Also, they've looked at the potential loss, and there's a classic quote I'm sure you've all seen that was quoted in the New York Times a while back just after the AIG situation, where the guy who headed up AIG Financial Products was quoted as saying that he couldn't imagine ever losing a dollar on these things. And the irony is that there haven't necessarily been that many payouts on those trades, but what they lost on was the fact that there was a significant mark-to-market loss which led to their downgrade and to the liquidity problems. So CDS are not the cause of the financial crisis from our perspective, and frankly, we've not seen or heard any serious suggestion by regulators to that effect. I mean, people have speculated about it. You've certainly seen plenty in the press, but if you do talk to regulators and talk to them about what they view as the underlying root causes, they focus principally on the housing finance issues. Credit default swaps are risk-shifting tools, just as other derivatives, all derivatives are. Companies could and did use credit default swaps to manage the risk to a very powerful effect. And as I say, look at this from the buyer's perspective. They were looking to get protection against these defaults, and that's exactly what they got. CDS are not the primary driver, not a primary driver, behind lending decisions. There's a suggestion that because there are these credit default swaps out there, banks were just lending freely. There's an element of that, certainly as it relates to the securitization market, but CDS are not a no-cost option. The relationship, the borrower relationship is maintained, so you need to continue to have that relationship with the borrower as a bank. There is the cost of protection. You have to pay a premium in order to get that protection, and you're taking on counterparty credit risk to the seller of the protection. You may have diversified your risk, but you haven't necessarily eliminated it. You may have taken on counterparty credit risk, contractual risk, legal risk by virtue of entering into these contracts. I mentioned before that credit default swaps are different from many other products. Again, always important from our perspective to emphasize the fact that these are bilateral, privately negotiated contracts. They're not securities, they're not capital formation tools where someone is pulling together investor funds and investing that money with the promise of a return. These are bilateral contracts entered into two parties where they take on credit exposure to each other. There's also that simple confusion in many ways, and we've seen this even in Congress or in regulators even confuse sometimes the notion of a credit default swap, a CDS, with a collateralized debt obligation, a CDO. We've seen people refer to derivatives and derivatives being the problem, and when you dig a little bit deeper, what they're talking about are CDOs, perhaps securitization, which in the classic sense of, or the classic definition of a derivative, something whose value is derived from the value of something else, those securitizations and CDOs could be considered derivatives in that sense. Regarding the notional, again, the exposure is not properly understood. Notional amount is a measurement of outstandings and activity, not exposure. And if you look at the numbers that the Bank for International Settlements publishes, and they published some just in the last few weeks, They estimate the gross exposure at mid-year 2008 was about 5.5% of notional. Now, that's up from earlier levels. Go back a couple of years, though, it was more in the 1% to 2% range. It was 3.5% at the end of 2007. So we're seeing an increase in that exposure, but that can hardly come as any surprise to anyone who's been observing the marketplace, and I think we can expect to see that percent go up a little bit higher, but it is still a fraction of the notional amount. There's been so much growth in this business, and certainly that's 55 trillion was our number at mid-year 2008. That was down from 62. First time we'd seen a drop in outstandings, and that's largely the efforts of the industry to reduce outstandings. But, you know, anytime you see a product or anything that has seen the rate of growth that we've seen over the last 7 or 8 years, that seems to suggest to somebody that something must be going on that they need to look into. And that's, frankly, I think driving a lot of the regulatory focus, certainly the political focus, that how could this business have grown so much? Well, there are actually a number of good reasons for that growth. First of all, the fundamental value of the product. These things provide important risk management, risk mitigation tools, and they are attractive to people who are looking to hedge risk as well as to investors who are looking to take a view on credit risk. Standardization of the product has been a significant development that has led to the growth in the outstandings, the notionals. That's largely the documentation that we've published, but there's also been standardization of payment dates. There's discussion now of standardization of coupons on the underlying trades, and that's provided a very significant driver to growth. The establishment of the indices, the iTraxx, the CDX indices that are used in the US and in Europe have been significant contributors to growth. And hedge funds and other investors have certainly gotten actively involved in this, at least until recently perhaps when they've had to focus on other things. But if you look out over the past 6 or 7 years, hedge funds and other users and investors are certainly a significant source of growth. Now, I mentioned that the infrastructure is strong, but there's certainly plenty more to do. We have been focusing on the settlement process. To date, over the past 3.5 years, the over 20 different auctions that we've run, we have implemented those as the credit event occurs by publishing a protocol which allows parties to amend their contracts to follow the settlement process. We're now looking at what we call hardwiring that into the definitions so that it would be a term of the agreement from the time parties agree to the contract and not something that we would need to address at the time of the credit event. That'll just provide greater efficiencies and certainty that people will follow that process. Cliff mentioned the general efforts on clearing. There are a number of different initiatives, the ICE initiative, which he mentioned, but also one with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So those are two that are based here in New York, and there's also one by Eurex and one by Life based in Europe. But one of the challenges here is that we really are talking about a global product, and so how do you introduce clearing in an effective way on a global product? And that's something that we're continuing to debate, and it's going to become, I think, a little bit of a political hot potato between the U.S. and Europe. I mentioned before this notion of tear-ups or reductions in outstandings, some people call compression. Frankly, it's just a bit of housekeeping. The volumes have grown. On the books of dealers, there's a lot of kind of offsetting trades where, you know, just dealing with the growth, they've added trades on. But in fact, if they look at them, they can actually identify a lot of trades that they can just tear up or get rid of, and that process is ongoing. There's information, a greater degree of information regarding credit default swaps outstanding than there was before. Just about a month ago, the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation, through their trade information warehouse, has provided a lot more information regarding outstandings for trades that are in the warehouse, and you can get a real sense as to the level of protection written on any name. So if you're interested in knowing the outstanding protection on GM or Ford and other names that has been written, that is on the DerivServe website of DTCC. And there's been focus on other operational issues, the notion of novations, which we addressed several years ago, which is effectively assignments of trades, backlogs and confirmation, matching of trades. This whole trade information warehouse is there to facilitate the entering into of trades, the assignment or novation of trades, as well as the payments regarding the trades and termination of the trades, if that should be. Now, we know that there'll be a lot of discussions, as well there should be, on regulation. And we know that derivatives, and particularly credit default swaps, will be considered part of a of the regulatory reforms. In fact, I've already testified in Congress several times over the past couple of months regarding that as they kind of set the table for considerations that will really begin in earnest next year. We just believe that as we look at these issues, and we should look at CDS, we should look at derivatives, but we need to look at that as part of a comprehensive set of regulatory reforms. Now, in the U.S., I think that'll be partly a consideration of restructuring the regulatory environment, whether certain agencies get merged, whether you establish a financial stability regulator, which has been suggested. But we also have to keep in mind that this is part of a global debate. As changes are made in any jurisdiction, these products are very fluid, and they can be traded elsewhere. And so whatever anyone is doing in any particular jurisdiction, there needs to be consideration at the international level. And we certainly know that groups like IOSCO, the Securities Commissioners, and the Bank for International Settlements, or the Basel Committee, are looking at these issues. But we do think, fundamentally, it's important to focus on root causes of the financial crisis and make sure that we are delivering solutions that are targeted at those root causes and not ones that are just ad hoc or piecemeal. So that's very important to keep in mind. And as we, regarding the rhetoric we've heard about the need to regulate and to rush to regulate, I just thought it'd be helpful to review a few quotes that we've seen. Here's one. I'm not at all convinced that voluntarism by the dealers and incremental adjustments of existing regulation will be sufficient to respond to the new risks created by derivatives. That's a senior Democratic congressman. We also have a senior Republican congressman saying it's not a question of if, but when Congress will act. A quote from the chairman of the House Banking Committee, who says, "You can call it whatever you want, but in my book, it's gambling." Another quote, "Your activities are now too important," this is a senior Bank of England official, "too important for central banks to ignore. Officials are concerned about the impact of your activities on the stability of the financial system. You must expect that the consequences will be closer attention from the authorities." And finally, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, who says, "High-tech banking and finance has its place, but it's not all it's cracked up to be. I hope this sounds like a warning, because it is." Well, the interesting thing there is that those are all from the early to mid-1990s, another time where there's a lot of focus on derivatives, what they were, maybe they'd grown too fast, maybe they were causing problems in the system. Now, I don't want to suggest that this is deja vu all over again. We know, and ISIS is well aware of the seriousness of this financial crisis, and we think that, and particularly the response to that financial crisis has been unprecedented with the investment by governments and banks around the world. So we know that this is different in many ways, but we think it's also important to keep in mind that we've been through some of this before, and we have to look at that and keep that in mind as we move forward. So we know there will be a debate on regulation, and I suspect we'll have a little bit of that over the course of today, and we welcome it, so long as there are no preconceptions and people are serious about identifying those root causes and coming up with appropriate solutions. And with that, I guess we'll move on to the panel. Viva?